it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, Richie Incognito calling Tua ass. Has everybody calling everything ass on the text page now? Nick Haley's.
I'm glad we can elevate the discourse.
Nick Haley's debut, ass. And then the follow up is actually Haley's debut might not have been ass, but it was still booty. LOL.
That's a good booty, John. I need you to do that in the Houston Press. A power ranking of posterior
ways to say butt
denigrations.
Yeah.
I want to try to sound. I want to sound as nerdy as possible on this one.
Ass is the worst. Booty is. Yeah, booty's kind of upscale. Ass is what that is. Yeah. All right. We'll
cheeks.
Get,
the we'll, kids like saying that's cheeks.
That's
yeah.
Dude. That is my son James's favorite one. Is cheeks.
Yeah, and he's not a kid anymore.
No, he uses cheeks.
He's
all
an
the time,
adult though. Attorney. Is he using in the courtroom yet?
No. That's James's. The James.
Oh,
that, is the,
sorry, sorry. Yeah,
he's the liquor
Sammy.
One.
Yeah,
no, Sammy. But Sammy wouldn't be afraid to. Use
Sammy,
cheeks.
Your Honor, that's cheeks.
It's cheeks, Your Honor. Yeah.
And then Your Honor wouldn't even know what to do with whether that's contempt or not.
Nope.
You'd be like, oh, that must be some legal term I don't know about.
That's
that the
right.
Kids are doing.
That's right.
Kids are using these days.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's right. No, James. James got so sideways with Eric Gordon when he was a Rocket that
yeah.
Eric Gordon's nickname just became cheeks. On our group text. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know.
That's a, you know what Sammy should do? I know he's got a good job now, and I know his bosses listen to our show.
Yeah.
But consider this. Maybe you find your little niche, the Rusty Harden happy endings are not a crime. Maybe the attorney with a happy ending.
Just keep business cards in all the massage places throughout Houston?
That could be your, yeah. That's I want to see those billboards. I want that lawyer to one day have an inappropriate ad that runs nonstop.
Yes. And then, right. Yeah. I want to do a 45-minute interview with my son talking about that. Yeah. And then he will say, it's not a crime. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Love Rusty. Running into Rusty every now and then is fun, man. All right. We'll do 5 Reasons I Hate You in the next segment. These Astros, man. The Astros last night. This one, to me, was in the conversation for worst game of the year. Given the fact that it occurred on the same day that the Mariners finally catch you in the standings, there's that. You got complete game shutouted, a two-hitter, which is, in 2025, that's the ultimate embarrassment to me. I don't care that Gausman's a good pitcher. I don't care. Getting a complete game shutout thrown against you may as well be a no-hitter in 2025 because guys just don't do it anymore. And the big thing to me, Seth, is that while we've been giving Joe Espada and the Astros a pass to a degree throughout most of the summer because of all the injuries, and the pitching injuries are still a thing, I get it, and I know Espada is working with a skeleton crew in both the rotation and in the bullpen right now, that's no excuse for this lineup. And it's not just yesterday. That's no excuse for this lineup not being good since they got all their guys back. Yordan Alvarez has been back for a month now. Carlos Correa, you traded for him back on July the 30th or 31st, whatever it was, the day of the trade deadline. Jake Myers is back in the lineup now, so we can't use the excuse of having to trot Taylor Trammell or Cooper Hummel or whatever 162 hitter you got from Sugarland on the Sugarland Express. You've got your guy back now who's been hitting 300, and you're going out, and again, it's not just yesterday. I don't know what the numbers are now. I just remember like last week, 11 of their last 18 games, they've scored 3 or fewer runs. They've added on more games since then where they've done, even the game that they won in this series 2 nights ago was a 3-2 win that you needed heroics from Yiner Diaz in the top of the 9th inning to win. There's no excuse for this lineup right now hitting the way they do with runners in scoring position, with runners on base, or at all.
I'll tell you what, man, there's no excuse, and yet Altuve's getting up there in years, and his current skid notwithstanding, if you just look at August and September, he's hitting 200 with a 629 OPS. I mean, it's been to try to think that there's going to be some kind of like, don't worry, Altuve, I'll get it going in the playoffs. This might be the year where finally, okay, age catches up to him, and you're not gonna get that same old Altuve again.
Okay, so that's interesting. So I'm nervous about Altuve. I'm more nervous about like 2028 with Altuve or 2027 and how that's gonna look. 2027 really, because that's when the contract is still $30 million a year. By the time 2028 and 2029 roll around, the way they've structured that thing, Altuve is gonna be making $10 million, so he's not eating up nearly as much. That's 3 years from now. As far as this season goes, he was one of the best hitters in baseball in July.
Right.
So that, I guess there's two arguments here. You go, okay, that's recent. It's in there somewhere with him. But the counter argument, I think, is the one that you're alluding to, which is
he's older.
Yeah.
Perhaps wearing down on the season. You know, remember, it was just a couple years ago that he hit 300 with a 900 OPS. So far on the season, right now he's 261. With a 762 OPS.
Yeah.
But you're 100% right, though. It's still in there. And you might just, once the playoffs hit, it might just click for him. It's 100% still in there somewhere. But with older players, it's the droughts start becoming more frequent than the good times. Yeah. And that's where we're right in the middle of a big old drought right now.
Yeah, with him, we are for sure. Jesus Sanchez was a disaster in the field. This is where, you know, it's weird, like, how the hitting affects other things that aren't hitting. Like, for example, you brought up, like, the fact that the Astros had the infield in the first inning of a game is because there's no confidence right now that they can go out and get you three or four runs. Like, you've got to play the first inning like it's the seventh or the eighth inning. And so the reason you're doing that is because you're poor offensively. The reason Jesus Sanchez is out there playing right field for you is because the Cam Smith that we saw in July is no longer that. Cam Smith, when you talk about Altuve being a disaster the last 6 weeks, my God, look at Cam Smith's offensive numbers. Cam Smith makes all of those plays in the outfield. You know, like, so if Cam were still hitting the way he was in July, there's no platoon going on. He's playing right field for you, and he's making those plays. Jesus Sanchez is in there because you got to platoon Cam Smith. You can't have him in there against right-handed pitching. You just can't right now.
Yeah. And then the biggest thing and the frustrating thing is that the one of the things that they wanted to get better at this year. So where Espada is a candidate for manager of the year at the All-Star break, now I'm looking at, okay, one of your areas of focus this year was having better judgment at the plate.
Yeah.
And they're just atrocious. Their judgment at the plate is right up there with the A's and some of the other worst teams in the league. Yep. Like, they're just – they're not competitive. They're not Christian Walker is great. He looks more like the kind of Christian Walker that you wanted when you signed him. But his judgment, his number of strikeouts is just ridiculous. I guess the absence of Paredes could have helped that out a little bit. But it's not like he's going to – or that if Paredes were still here, the judgment at the plate numbers as a team would be good. But they're not better. They wouldn't be good.
No, but that's interesting you say that. No, they'd be better because he's better. I get what you're saying. He's better at it, so their percentage would at least be better. But they as a team were better when Paredes was in the lineup. Like, is there something to that you know, we talk about tone setters. You know, is that a guy who's set him being in the lineup somehow? There's some sort of gravitational pull that other guys have a little bit better judgment? Because as you point out, Seth, this hasn't been an all-year thing. Through the first few months of the season, they were way better and way more selective at the plate. It's become a second half of the season thing, and Paredes went out shortly after the All-Star break. I think it was July 19th was the date that he went out with a hamstring injury. It's been a disaster since then, for sure. I do kind of wonder that. Like, sometimes when you have a guy like that in the lineup, that, you know, guy, there's something about guys observing a guy doing that, maybe being a bit more mindful of it themselves.
Yeah.
With Paredes, I don't know. Maybe I'm grasping at straws here.
It's weird. Just even looking at like Christian Walker's chase rate, because the last couple years before this, he was up in the high 60s or 70 percentile, and this year he's in the 49th percentile. Yep. Like, just I know a lot of this is weighted by the beginning of the season and what have you, but he strikes out with runners in scoring position all the time.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
It's almost not an exaggeration.
It's been all year, man.
It feels like it's 100% of the time.
It does feel like that. It's okay. So now we're getting Altuve has been ass the last 2 months. Old ass now. So not even booty. He's been ass.
Oh, like the cellulite's starting to show up.
Yeah. So what Sean is saying is the Astros offense is a big old bag of cheeks. Okay. Espada is cheeks. That's on the tech. Okay, now here's one. Joe Espada was a manager of the year candidate 2 months ago.
Yeah.
If they miss the postseason, something they've not done since 2016, it's been a decade of October baseball here in the city of Houston. What happens with Joe Espada?
This is, okay, the injuries to the pitching staff are almost enough of an excuse for everything when it comes to the team performance. Yeah. But the approach at the plate and everything else, that offensively you've got this many guys underperforming, and that's where I start to let it seep in, that I can give an excuse for the overall performance if all it was just the pitching alone, but you're failing at both ends of the spectrum.
Yeah.
It just feels like an all-out collapse all over the place.
I'm not saying Joe Espada should be fired. I'm just asking the question, and the reason I ask the question is this is an owner who severed ties with a GM 4 days after a World Series win. Yeah. You know, it's, and I know that that team was mostly Jeff Luhnow guys going and winning that World Series in 2022. I get it. But if you go back and look at the totality of James Click's moves that he made, I mean, there's not a Correa trade in there. You know, there's not a Verlander trade like Dana Brown made his first year as GM. There's not a Greinke or a first Verlander trade. But there were a lot of good moves that James Click made. You know, Yiner Diaz is the catcher of this team because they got him and Phil Maton for Miles Straw. You know, Mauricio Dubon has been a solid utility guy. They got him for nothing when James Click was here. And there were other moves that were made too. And I know some of you are going to be rolling, whoa, boo, big whoop, Mauricio Dubon, big whoop, Yiner Diaz. Like, yeah, but they were all positive moves for the Astros. Like, there aren't James Click, I mean, I can't remember him making moves that were seriously damaging to the team. He didn't give out contracts that I can recall. That were, I mean, he was the one, the Yordan Alvarez extension happened on his watch, not Dana Brown's watch.
Yeah.
So I say that to say that I think everything is in play with Jim Crane. You know, I think the way that James Click was let go from the organization tells me, and the timing of it right after winning a World Series, if he does that with a GM after winning the World Series, he could very easily fire a manager who had all these issues during the season after getting eliminated from the postseason, or maybe even getting a wild card, but getting knocked out in the first round might be enough.
It's definitely in the realm of it wouldn't be a huge surprise.
Right.
Right. Yeah. Right. Like it's given everything that you laid out, it wouldn't be a huge surprise.
Right.
It's not. I don't know if you expect it, but it wouldn't be a huge surprise.
Yeah. Y'all are reaching hard. This Astros team is decent at best, playing a bad division. They aren't
how
good.
Are we
let's
reaching?
Be honest.
What are you talking about?
Yeah, they're the tallest. What? How are we reaching?
What do you, they've been losing. Like, okay, you're saying they're decent at best, right? But they've been still underperforming. Like, guys are very specifically underperforming by their historical standards.
What?
Like, what are we reaching? Am I saying that they should be winning the World
Series? No, I'm going to ask politely, what are we reaching on, Texter? I just said yesterday was the worst game ever. I've been outlining all the futility going on the offensive side of the ball.
Yeah.
We just talked for 2 minutes about firing the manager possibly after the season. Not once has the word World Series come up other than talking about the World Series they won 3 years ago.
Yeah.
Are we reaching by just talking about them? Just by giving them airtime like, on our radio station?
I point out that they're 25th or so in runs scored this year and everything. Right. Yeah. Am I saying they're better than decent? We're saying they haven't even been playing up to decent. What the hell are you talking about?
Okay, someone just said pump the brakes, guys. Now I'm gonna give this person a pass because that could either be somebody who is y'all are reaching hard guy, or that could be pump the brakes on even talking about firing Joe Espada.
Yeah,
which I'll accept that. Like it is.
Or Altuve. I'm talking about how Altuve's been the last couple months exactly.
Yeah.
And, okay, is this the sign that an aging guy is actually aging the way nature intends?
Well,
I don't know.
Are we reaching hard? Okay, was I reaching hard by saying it's inexcusable what this lineup is doing right now? That is this texter saying that a lineup that has Jose Altuve, Jeremy Peña, Carlos Correa, Yordan Alvarez, Christian Walker, Yiner Diaz, et cetera, that they should be scoring more than three runs on a regular basis? Am I
reaching
hard?
Like, what's your definition of decent? So decent at bat. Like, we're pointing out that they've been one of the worst in the absolute league.
Yeah.
So I would, if they were hitting average right now, that would be a revelation. They're really, really bad.
Yeah.
Like, this is a, they're not scoring runs.
Yeah.
It's a, we don't need to get advanced analytics into any of this. No. They're not scoring runs.
No.
It, well, meanwhile, it, half their, it's like a Civil War battlefield on the pitching side of things. Yeah.
Yeah, there's still games to play. That's a text. Yeah, pump the brakes on Altuve and the manager. We're not there yet. Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah, I didn't say get rid of Altuve. I'm just wondering, all right, what
are
we going to...
I'm not even saying get rid of Espada. All I'm saying is that we are living in a world... We have steadily been descending into this world that we're about to possibly live in now. The peak point here for this franchise was the 2022 World Series. Like, that's the most recent peak. Since then... They went through a season where they had to fight to win the division in 2023 and lost in seven in the ALCS because they couldn't win a damn home game. And then last year, they had to similarly fight and punch their way out of an awful start just to win the division again and then get eliminated in two games by the Detroit Tigers. Where they are now is the continuation of the trajectory that they've been on since they won that World Series. So now these are conversations that have to be had. Like, there's a... FanGraphs has them still as it's still a better than 50% chance they're in the postseason, but it's a lower than 50% chance that they win the division. Look, we're going to get a lot of truth over these next 9 days. Okay, they're playing a bad team in Atlanta with their two aces going over the weekend in Hunter Brown and Framber Valdez. If they don't win two out of three against Atlanta, it is a major red flag. And then you got Texas and Seattle coming to town next week. The truth will be evident the Monday after that Seattle series is over. We'll know where this whole thing is going after that. But yeah, like this text I'll agree with. Boring to watch, no excitement. Yes, I was bored to tears yesterday during that game. And they've had way too many boring games this year.
They've been a losing since just arbitrarily, just July 1st. They've been a losing baseball team since July 1st.
Yeah, yeah, it's
and
not
it's actually
fun.
Longer than that, but just, yeah.
And we're not used to it. You know, we're not used to this. It's you get spoiled. All right, five reasons I hate you. They play the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, do the Texans, on Monday. We have five reasons, and if you want to text in some more, I'm open to them. 713-572-4610. We do five reasons I hate you, Tampa Bay edition, next.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns.
And you're seeing exactly
you know why it's not outside of Cleveland. You know, think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
The Astro reactions are really interesting to me. I want them to make the postseason. Obviously, I'm an Astros fan. But the chatter around the team will be incredibly intriguing if they don't. I guess I'm just a fan. This is a text. I'm not going to trash Espada until the Astros are done. Okay, well, that's good for you. And we're not trashing him. We're just, I think, just proposing scenarios given the history with Jim Crane. He's let people go for less than... missing the playoffs. He let James Click go after winning a World Series. You can't do much better. Maybe if they had swept the World Series, you know, instead of winning in six.
Yeah, I don't know. On the spectrum of trashing things, I feel like if we gotten to a point where when we just point out basic things, like actual facts about the situation, people interpret it as like, I can't believe you're trashing the team.
Well,
what'd you do?
Well,
I pointed out that they're 25th in scoring runs on the season, that they've got the worst judgment at the plate. Like, these are facts.
Right.
Second worst judgment at the plate.
Right. No. There are people getting angry with us saying we're trashing, except for the one guy who thinks we're reaching too hard on the
Somehow
Astros.
Reaching too hard and that you're decent at best. I don't know what. I can't please everybody all the time.
I guess not.
I guess not. I guess, yeah.
All right, let's do.
Like old Abe told us.
That's right. Let's do five reasons I hate you, Tampa Bay edition. We do this every Friday before a Texans game. On Monday, you guys know, normally 2 hours on Monday during football season. Excited to say that this Monday, since the game is on Monday night, we will be doing, Seth and I will be with you all 4 hours on Monday. The 8 to 10 a.m. hours, we will be joined by Mark Vandermeer for one of the hours and John Harris for the other hour. So we'll be Texans heavy in those 2 hours that are normally Texans radio. And Andre Ware and Andy Kalu are going to stop by. So it'll be fun. It'll be an intensive preview of the Buccaneers and the Texans. But Five Reasons I Hate You remains a Friday staple. So let's get to it. Number five, reasons to hate the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Hassan Reddick is on this team, and Hassan Reddick is a flake. Hassan Reddick, if you recall, Hassan Reddick started his career in Arizona. It was a first-round pick of the Arizona Cardinals. Took him a while to develop, but in his final year there, he had 12 and a half sacks. He hit free agency, and the deal that he ended up signing on a 12 off of a 12 and a half sack season was a one-year deal with his former college coach, Matt Rhule. Mm-hmm. Hassan Reddick went to Temple when Matt Rhule was the coach at Temple. Signed him there, had 11 sacks again. Signs a three-year deal with the Eagles. Has 16 sacks and is an all-pro in 2022, the year the Eagles made the Super Bowl and lost to the Chiefs. The next year, he was a pro bowler again with 11 sacks. And then that offseason, he wanted a new contract. And the Eagles didn't want to give him one. They gave him permission to seek a trade. He found a trade with the Jets. The Jets traded a third-round pick to the Eagles for Hassan Reddick. Maybe some of this is on the Jets, too. Knowing full well Hassan Reddick wanted a new contract, traded a third-round pick and then promptly did not give him a new contract. So he then requested a trade from the Jets, a team he had yet to play a snap for, in August of that year.
Right. Ends up playing 10 games for the Jets.
Yeah.
Had
One sack last year. One sack last year.
Look, sacks don't tell the whole story, but they tell a big part of the story.
One in 10
have one
games.
Sack. That's not the production you're looking for.
Yeah.
I fear now he's dealing with a foot injury. He had a sack last week, but I fear that he might be going the Le'Veon Bell route here, where when you're a guy that really makes a huge commotion about holdouts and getting traded and controlling your own fate and whatever, sometimes it spells doom for the rest of your career.
You're going to be a one-year guy everywhere. Like, no one's going to want to sign up for multiple years with you. And he's on a decent contract with Tampa. I think he's making $10-12 million for a year, which is good money considering you were horrible for the Jets and kind of a distraction the year before. But that's reason number five, Seth. Hassan Reddick, flake. Reason number four, let's be real about this. Just in general, if we take a step back, you guys know Florida Man. Many of you out there, the Twitter account Florida Man, which is really just a bunch of stories of meth heads from Florida doing weird things.
Yeah, it's guys, weird stories. About Florida's got a lot of weird people in it. It's kind of it's the West Coast of the East, which is that all the weirdos either the really ambitious weirdos just seem to move westward and then they get stopped by the Pacific Ocean. With Florida, it's like the weirdos who don't even have the ambition to follow the manifest destiny of heading westward. Go west, young man. They're like, I'm not going to stick around in Florida. I'll just go to Florida, okay? That's a long ways out there to California. So like the less ambitious weirdos end up in Florida. And then they have children.
Yeah.
Sometimes many, many children.
Yes.
And it's created a weird environment in Florida.
So if Florida Man had an NFL franchise, it would be the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Weird uniforms from throughout their history. Weird uniforms, a chaotic history, players that make headlines for the wrong reasons, a pirate ship in the stadium that shoots cannons at various times.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of an acid trip, that stadium. If you've ever been there, I know you've probably played there before, Seth.
No, I never played in that stadium.
Really? No. Okay, yeah, that's true. You played for two AFC teams, so yeah, maybe not. Amy and I went there 2 years ago for our bye week trip. Uh-huh. It is a strange stadium. There's no, we had a good time, but it's peak Florida. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers are Florida in a microcosm.
There's nothing more peak Florida than being, that people say that it's South Florida. And then when you look at a map, you're like, that's smack dab in the center of Florida.
Like the west coast.
In terms of latitude.
Yeah, latitude. Yeah.
The University of South Florida is right there at the midpoint of Florida.
Yep.
Which I feel like is an aspirational thing or something. Like, hey, we're South Florida. We're where the... Yeah, no, hey, look, we can import cocaine as well. We can do all those things. We can drive Ferraris when we don't actually have the money to do it.
I like it. Yeah, I like it. All right, number three. They won a championship recently, back in 2020. But if we're going to sit here and call the Dodgers title a COVID title, if we're going to call the Lakers title a COVID title, we've got to call the Tampa Bay Buccaneers title a COVID title. They won a
phony championship. Yeah. There wasn't even there. There were barely any human beings there to actually witness it, you know, and to sign off on it. I'm not convinced it actually happened.
Might not have even happened. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. A bunch of placards you impressed there at the stadium that day. Cool.
The only good thing to come out of that Tampa Bay championship, we got to see what bleep-faced Tom Brady looks like. We don't see that often. Yeah.
Yeah. The other thing, though, too, and this is there, I don't think, listen, everybody, just settle down for a second, because I'm about to mention a COVID thing, and people get all triggered for no reason whatsoever. Regardless of how you felt about COVID regulations, pro, anti, whatever, wherever you are, Florida was amongst the looser states in the union.
Yeah.
So I feel like the Bucks in operating in that environment, whether you were for or against that environment, I feel when it comes to compared to other NFL franchises, the Bucks had it a lot easier.
Yeah.
Remember Tom Brady wandering around into random people's homes when the NFL was supposed to be on lockdown so he could work out with, who was it? It was one of the coaches. I can't remember who it was.
I forget who it was.
No, it was what's his name? The quarterback from the Jaguars.
Byron Leftwich.
Byron Leftwich.
There you go.
Good job, Ben. He was supposed to go to Byron Leftwich's home, but he showed up and walked into somebody else's.
Can you imagine?
He had to be pulled up breaking and entering onto somebody's residence.
Yeah. This COVID title was a big deal. There was a lot of extra ripple effect from that damn COVID title. B&E. Yeah.
So because they got to operate in a looser environment, they had an unfair advantage in that season. So, I put an asterisk on that championship.
Sometimes when it's hard to find real football reasons, I didn't even include Baker Mayfield in 5 reasons I hate you, because I don't hate Baker Mayfield anymore. I actually like Baker Mayfield now.
Well, he says Gardner Minshew was the ultimate Florida man type of quarterback. When he was in Jacksonville, that just felt like, oh, yeah. Dude with weird facial hair and jorts. Yeah, that's Florida guy. Yeah, yep. Baker Mayfield feels a little bit like he could have been born and raised in Florida.
He does. I'd be inauthentic if I said that I hated Baker Mayfield. So when I have a tough time finding guys to hate on a team, I don't hate Mike Evans. When I have a tough time finding guys to hate, I will go to the tried and true, what is a stupid law that this town or state has? Number two, Tampa has a law called the cottage cheese rule, where it's technically illegal to eat cottage cheese after 6 p.m. on a Sunday. Why does this rule exist? According to AI, maintaining peace. Some believe the law was enacted to help maintain peace and quiet on Sunday evenings. Also, others joke it was due to a conflict between cottage cheese enthusiasts and the city council's preferred snack food lobby. As far as enforcement of this arcane law, it is highly unlikely that law enforcement in Tampa actively patrol for late-night dairy consumption. The law is considered strange and outdated.
It was also, there is something to do with about either rationing during World Wars I and II.
That makes more sense,
That makes more sense. Is that any day of the week or just on Sunday?
Just Sunday, 6 p.m. on Sunday. It's a blue law, basically.
So it's a blue law of some sort. Yeah. What the hell?
Yeah. It's reason number two.
That's one of the weird laws I've heard. Yeah.
Reason number two.
You can't have the kids out there eating cottage cheese wantonly on a Sunday.
Dude.
Do we have no rules? Do we have no dignity anymore? You want kids to be out there riding around town, wooing women with cottage cheese promises.
Ne'er-do-wells. Yes.
Yeah.
Do you like cottage cheese?
I do, but I got to kind of... I find it gross, but I still enjoy it. Okay. I have to not think about it.
Yeah.
It's one of those things, like, I enjoy it if I don't think about it.
It's good for you, right?
Like, most dairy products in general, every now and then, and you got to remember, I grew up in a dairy farming family.
Yeah,
it's true. There's still a moment every now and then where, like, I'm eating cow juice here. This is where I'm eating something. I'm drinking or eating something that was just squeezed out of a mammal.
Yeah.
And it's just, that part of it, it weirds me out a little bit, even though I eat a lot of dairy products.
You ain't saying that while you're eating those 13 ice cream sandwiches in the press box, I tell you.
I know. That's what you need to remind me of.
Oh, okay.
The next time you catch me eating all those cottage cheese sandwiches. No, Sean, I had a cheese sandwich just last night. You know what I mean? It's every now and then it's a comfort food that you forgot about.
Yeah.
And I was kind of, our pantry's a little bit bare because I told my wife I was going to do the shopping like 7 days ago. But I was hungry and I was like, oh, I've got bread, I've got mayonnaise, and I've got a block of cheddar cheese.
Beautiful.
Oh my God. I can eat so
that.
Good.
Yeah. I could eat
and
that.
The third one was just as good as the first.
I knew it. I knew it. That was my next question. The over under.
Yeah. Now, if you, Seth, when are you going to go on that shopping trip? Probably sometime around the next time I poop 7 days from now. Yeah. After three, it wasn't just, I used that whole block of cheese for those three
sandwiches. Yeah, yeah. All right. Number one reason to hate Tampa Bay. I think we can all get in unison on this one. Warren Sapp is a hero of their franchise. He's a Hall of Famer. He's in their Ring of Honor. And he is a jackass. He's a jerk.
Yeah, he's just a jerk. People in Tampa didn't like Warren. If there's one thing, if anybody from Tampa were to be listening to this segment and they were getting all agitated about it, by the time we get to Warren Sapp, they're like, yeah.
I get
yeah,
it. I get it. Okay, there's a reason cool. He's number one, right?
I get it. Yeah.
There's a reason he's number one.
The best Warren Sapp story was when he had to declare bankruptcy, which whatever, that happens. But he claimed that he had lost his Super Bowl ring because he didn't want to have to put that in the assets that he might have to auction off. Which, and I get if maybe you lied about that one a little bit. I would understand why somebody would do that. But then, like 3 years later, he shows up at a celebration for the Bucks Super Bowl team wearing the Super Bowl ring. Yeah.
You got to be respectful of your lie, man. You can't just flout it.
And let's remember when he got into a situation that got him fired from NFL Network, where it was with a couple of ladies of the night had some kind of they had allegations against them, and it was about him not paying the bill.
Didn't want to pay.
That was his allegation, was that it's all these things where you're like, oh, this guy's not a good dude,
not
man.
A good guy, man. Not a good guy. So Warren Sapp, number one reason to hate the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. You're reminding me of Antonio Brown. He was a Tampa Bay Buccaneer. There's another one. You know, we'll put Warren Sapp and Antonio Brown collectively at number one. Two former Buccaneers who are very easy to dislike. All right, I'm really surprised at some of the questions that D'Amico Ryans and C.J. Stroud were getting yesterday about the feel of the team and is everybody still on board and together and are you hearing the noise? It's 1 week, everybody.
It's 1 week. Not to mention, I've got an issue with Texans fans right now.
Okay,
too, that I need to get this off my chest.
Okay, good. This will probably be some fuel for you to do that coming up in the next segment. So we'll do that.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
A couple reasons on the text page that people hate Tampa Bay and the Buccaneers. I hate you because Mike Evans should be a Texan. Remember that 2 years ago when we were kicking that around? When I think it was the offseason that they traded for Diggs, is Mike Evans was a free agent, and he signed a two-year deal. He's going to be a free agent again after this year. Maybe they take another swing at it. We'll see.
They all of it this year, it seemed like they pretty much they love him. He loves them.
Yeah.
He's probably not going to go anywhere.
As long as they're good, he'll be there probably.
Yeah, yeah. I think that this last time might have been the time that there was any kind of him like trying to get as much money as possible or what have you. I bet I wouldn't hold your breath, because I feel like by the time Mike Evans leaves Tampa, it's going to be when it's time for him to leave. He's in the Jerry Rice with the Seahawks phase of his career.
Yeah, you might not want Mike Evans at that point on your team. The Tampa Bay coach never looks happy. It makes me sad to look at him. That would be Todd Bowles.
Todd Bowles always looks unhappy.
Yeah, yeah.
Does he always have a serious look on his face, I suppose? Yeah.
I don't even know if he has teeth. I don't think I've ever seen him smile before.
He's not like a hard ass or anything.
No, he's a player's coach.
I think
he's
largely regarded as a player's coach.
Yeah.
He's just always focused, intently focused.
And the Todd Bowles era has worked out all right for them. I mean, they've been a playoff team.
This was kind of like the Rams. I had a hard time. I was just looking through the Bucks roster, and I had a hard time. I don't feel any kind of way about most of these guys on the roster. I love Mike Evans.
Yeah.
That makes it difficult. I really love Mike Evans.
It was
That's
hard.
The kind of guy you want on your team.
Yeah, it was hard to find five reasons to hate the Buccaneers. I will admit that. Now, next week is Jacksonville. We could do five Gladstone reasons if we want. We do a whole separate Gladstone five reasons.
We could probably do one a day that entire week.
Yeah, we could.
We might.
Yeah.
If you want to get let's get up is for the Travis Hunter game.
Yeah, it's Hell Week.
Redefining expectations.
Hell Week. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. That's what it's going to be. D'Amico Ryans. Yesterday at his press conference reassured all of Houston, like, hey. We're together. This team is, it's 0-1 is not going to break this team apart.
Our team is together. It's not, the building isn't burning down. We're together. We didn't execute, right, on some plays. It didn't turn out good for us. We ended up losing the game, but our team is together. Our team has never not been together. We're together. We're ready to go play on Monday night. That's what it's about for us.
I saw this on video yesterday, Seth, just that cut, and I'm like,
yeah.
What was the question? Because
there have been a couple questions like that this week, but then in general, too, I feel like the reaction to losing the first game in an NFL season where you were the underdog and you're on the road and
you had a
the Rams
chance to
are
win.
A good team last year. Yeah. Right. I'm kind of here for it. I like it that people are that dialed in, that people are really, really freaking out. And it's largely because you didn't score a touchdown.
Yeah.
That's why. I think the questions are fair in that you spent all offseason revamping the offense. You got rid of Laremy Tunsil, you bring in a new offensive coordinator, all of these things that the expectations were that maybe it's a close game, maybe you lose, but you want to see some life out of the offense. So I totally 100% get it. But I also think that if you really thought about it during training camp, you realize there's going to be some hiccups along the way in installing a new offense, and that also you're facing one of the best defensive lines in football.
Yeah.
So, I don't – if this team were somehow showing cracks after losing one single football game in the opening week, I would be scared as hell about
it. Yeah.
This doesn't feel like the biggest challenge, though, for how does the coach keep the team together in circumstances such as this. Like,
yeah.
I don't think you really think about it that much. It was one game.
No.
You get ready to play the next game.
Well, you pointed this out earlier in the week that not that the players don't take the losses as hard as the fans do or anything like that, but I think fans in general or people outside the building, from what you said, was that they tend to overrate how easy it is just to turn the page.
Yeah.
And just, man, it's on to the next. It's always on to the next.
This is an issue I have with some Texans fans where they got to settle the hell down. And it's this. Every single time three dudes on Twitter question whether CJ Stroud is good, you do not have to turn it into a torches and pitchfork affair of defending the honor of CJ Stroud.
Right.
It's, I swear, I see so many people out there be like, my pearls, I cannot believe anybody is questioning CJ Stroud. Where is your faith? Where is your faith in this moment of need, in this hour of despair? It's like three dudes on Twitter.
Yeah.
Like, what the hell are you even talking about? And then the other thing that annoys me, and this is not just Houston, this is every fan base. Every damn fan base has people who are like, only this fan base would people be acting like that. No, dude, that's human beings everywhere, okay? And it's not that many people.
Yeah.
It's just, you don't have to defend somebody and act like a few random people are some kind of an onslaught of criticism or something.
Yeah.
Oh. And those people might be saying, like, Seth, maybe you should try not getting worked up about those people. I agree.
I do not. I like
that
it.
That one triggers me is when people say, like, oh, this fan base, only this fan base. Like, all right, dude, spend a little time in the world.
Yeah.
No, you should be saying only human beings. Only human beings would react like this.
Right. This is why I'm moving to Mars. And interact with those beings up there.
Yeah, those fan bases up there act much more rational.
Much more rational. Here was C.J. Stroud reassuring again that the fan base, that they're going to keep grinding.
For me, I've been in this team myself. I've been in this position a bunch where everybody thinks you suck and whatever they want to think. Cool, y'all go ahead and do that. We're going to continue to grind. If we lay an egg again, we're going to get back up. We're going to trust each other. It really doesn't matter what everybody else thinks. So, you know, it takes time to build. You know, like we've been watching, sorry, I know I'm long-winded, but watching a lot of film of New England back when they were like in 2002, 2003, 2004. They didn't, and now, of course, they won, but they didn't look like what they did in their strong run right away. And of course, that's the goal, to get it as quick as possible, but sometimes it's not the reality. So I'm trying my best to keep our guys' mojo up, and I think we're doing a good job of it.
Yeah, I think that's – like, and again, it's one game, and in trying to extrapolate it out to the rest of the season, invoking New England is perfect, because the two most notable ones were when they got destroyed by Kansas City in a year that they would go on to win the Super Bowl back in the 2010s. And then a few years later, they got beat. It wasn't as much, but they got beat bad by Detroit early in the season. Yeah. Ended up coming back, winning a Super Bowl. Like, that's the lesson you learn is, all right, you got to not read into these early victories and losses all that much.
Yep. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. It is a Football Friday. It is also a Take-A-Mania Friday. Every Friday at 9 o'clock, Seth and I have a defending champ when it comes to the worst take that we've heard. And that champ may or may not get taken down by, boy, we've got a bunch of challengers this week. Are any of them worthy of taking down Chad Ochocinco and Shannon Sharp?
One of the worst and yet one of my favorite takes,
I know,
of all time.
I'm so excited to listen to this again. We'll have Take-A-Mania for you at 9 a.m. Friday, coming up next.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns.
And yeah, you're seeing exactly, you know, what why people it's not, outside of Cleveland, you know, think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.